Proudly presented by Paul Everett's RV Country. This is Hometown Heroes, celebrating everyday Americans who answer the call of duty.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and a different twist this Independence Day weekend. We'll get back to the World War II generation next week with a vet who was on Normandy's Omaha Beach on D-Day. Today, we're getting the perspective of 66-year-old Army veteran Jack Craig of Bakersfield, California. He spent 11 months in Vietnam with the 23rd Infantry Division. What was the most difficult part of being over there?
The hardest part about being over there is never having a bed to lay down in. And never having an air mattress that would hold air and sleeping on the ground for 11 months.
Yeah.
Or 10 months.
If you could sleep.
If you were allowed to sleep. Nobody ever got more than 2, maybe 3 hours of sleep at a time because it would be their rotation to sit stand guard.
Mm-hmm. You told us before the break about your first Purple Heart when an explosion sent shrapnel into your face. You even said you can't shave because the right side of your face has been numb ever since. And I guess if it had been an inch or two off, maybe you might have lost an eye, maybe worse.
Yeah, or if it had been over here, it'd have gone through my sinus cavity and probably into my brain.
Yeah, and we wouldn't be talking right now.
Yeah.
And I'm sure, and you were wounded again, another Purple Heart in October that month, but I'm sure, of that year, I should say, I'm sure in between. From March to October, you got 7 months there. I bet there were some close calls during that time period.
Oh, yeah.
Any that stand out?
What always stood out to me was the forced helicopter rides and being dropped in the middle of everybody shooting at us.
How often did that happen?
About once a month. We'd have to go in and try to bail out another unit or something like that. And as we'd come in, it would be a hot LZ, and there'd be gunfire all over the place. And that was the scary part. But once the helicopters lifted off, and you realize that you're in the middle of this, and you got no place to go but to run or fight, that was even more scary because you didn't really know who you were fighting yet.
Right. Where they were or what they had.
Uh-huh.
Flying blind.
Yes.
Yikes.
And the other bad part about, I'll sound like I belong on a soapbox, but the reason, you know, we never lost a battle in Vietnam. The United States military never lost a battle. They say we lost the war, but the military didn't. The politicians gave it away because we always came out ahead in the battles. That's my soapbox. I dislike people getting involved in a war or telling people that are in a war or in harm's way from some thousand miles away what they can and can't do. They're over there to survive, and they're over there to protect themselves and their buddies, and just leave us alone and let us do our job, and we'll be home pretty soon because there won't be anything left over here to fight.
I mentioned the Bronze Star has been awarded to you on 4 separate occasions there. I noticed one of those citations had a date on it for a specific incident, and it was actually the day before you were wounded for the second time.
Mm-hmm.
What's the story there?
It was one of those urgent, out of the clear blue sky, getting a helicopter trips. The other company in our battalion, and they were sending us in to try to recover any of the wounded or to help them fight their way out. Well, I got wounded, but things settled down. My company went in, and we went through the village, and we found no one alive. The entire company was dead.
Wow.
And I'm sitting on the outside of the village, you know, with a hole in my shoulder. And that was, there was two of us. There were two awards given that day. One was a Silver Star and one was a Bronze Star. there were two Silver Stars put in for. But because he was in front of me and he helped me get out, even though we opened up the village from where we were so that they could get in and check it out, they lowered my Silver Star to a bronze with a V, and he got the Silver Star. Which is, I think it's great. He deserved it. You have, in the sequence of military, you have the Congressional Medal of Honor. Then you have the Silver Star. Then you have the Bronze Star. So I came within two stripes of a Congressional Medal of Honor. Okay. I think I did pretty good.
You're not complaining. Mm-mm. You're here.
Yep. Most Congressional Medal of Honor winners aren't here.
Exactly. That, and a lot of times that's part of the commendation itself. But the reason they recognized you and they gave you the Bronze Star with the V for Valor was that you guys risked your lives to go in there to try to save that other company.
Yes. And unfortunately, when we landed, it was a hot LZ, and we crawled our way through the weeds, hunched down, going real slow, checking it out, and trying to get inside the village to open up this area of the village so that they could get in and spread out from the inside out. And unfortunately, being at the front, like the dummy I always was, but I always led. I never followed when I was in the military. I always led. That's when I got shot in the shoulder. I heard something out of the clear blue sky. I heard something move, and I turned to look, and the bullet grazed my shoulder this way.
Mm-hmm.
If I hadn't turned, it probably would have went in here and out the other side.
And who knows what it would have hit in between.
Well, I doubt if I'd be here. Because it would have gone through one lung into my heart. And if it had, was, depends on what caliber of weapon it was, it may have gone all the way through.
So it hit you in your left shoulder, but if you hadn't have turned, it would have come right through your chest.
Yes.
And what was it that made you turn and look?
I just heard something. It was like a sense. I heard something over here, and I wanted to turn and see what it was. You know, it's when you're in a situation like that, your emotions and your senses are so spiked up high. Mm. You are amped to no end.
Right.
You know, it's like somebody that had just pounded down four or five monster drinks. You know, I mean, you were just literally that extreme.
The adrenaline was pumping.
Mm-hmm.
But you're hit. You've got a wounded shoulder.
And then I hit the floor, and I turned, and I saw the little pop his head up out of a spider hole.
Yeah.
And he threw a grenade at me. And that's what got shrapnel all over my back and my neck and head and everything.
How did it not kill you?
He was a bad shot, bad target. He couldn't throw very well.
Good thing.
But I could throw.
Hmm.
And I plopped a grenade right down in the box in the hole with him and watched it go up.
Hmm.
And never cared whether he lived or died.
Well, at that point, it sounds like it was you or him.
Well, it was.
Yeah.
And that was the way all of the guys in the field, all of the guys that were actually in that war in combat, that's how we all felt. It's either him or me.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, and then, you know, after we get home and 4 or 5 years later, I had a hell of a time with the why him, not me.
The survivor's guilt?
Yeah. I had a hell of a time. I mean, to the point that I was crushed. I lost a lot of good people over there, whether they were with me or just guys I knew.
Yeah.
If from training and all of this stuff. I lost a very, very good friend from Sand Springs, Oklahoma. And, I mean, he was good. He was a good man.
What was his name?
His name was Randy Phillips, and he's buried in Sand Springs, Oklahoma.
What happened to him?
I don't know. All it says was deceased. We, him and I used to write back and forth to each other. Mm-hmm. And I'd send him a letter and tell him how what I was doing. He'd send me a letter telling me what he was doing. He was in the 101st Airborne up north of Da Nang. Mm. And I was down in Chu Lai, Duc Pho, about 100 miles south of Da Nang. But I had a hell of a time with him because he was a football jock, wanted to go to college, but he got drafted. Because he didn't take enough classes, but he decided it was time for him to go to service. So he went, and he went in the service. He was engaged to be married when he got home. Mm. I went by and saw his grave once. I missed him, and it took me a long time, unfortunately, way too much alcohol, to get to the realization that it's not my fault that he didn't make it.
Wow.
You know, it took me a lot to accept that.
Yeah.
And you'll find that happens with a lot of the guys. A lot of the guys that have PTSD,
yeah,
like I do, we came to that conclusion, and instead of either coming to that conclusion or you perpetuated that guilt by drinking or fighting with your family.
I don't want to press my finger into that wound, and you're being very candid about the emotional scars. You
yes.
have some physical scars. You've got metal all over your body still from the enemy there in Vietnam, but the emotional scars. And in thinking about your friend Randy over all these years, have you ever found yourself thinking, what would that guy be doing today? What kind of life would he have right now?
Yes. In fact, I know what he'd be doing right now.
What's that?
He would either be one thing, his family owned a business, so he would have been in the family business. But I think if he wasn't in the family business, he would probably be running the town of Sand Springs, Oklahoma, because he was that popular a guy.
Yeah.
You know, either that or he'd be chief of police or something.
Well, and I want to come back to your injuries and what happened to you, but that probably is a good point to ask you about the wall, because one of the reasons the Vietnam War Memorial is so powerful is the mm-hmm. names. I mean, we take World War II veterans to Washington, D.C., and they go look at the World War II Memorial and the Korean War Memorial, and they're both moving in their own ways. But these World War II guys break down and are more emotional at the Vietnam Wall than anywhere else, and it's because of those names.
It's because most of them have a child or a relative that's on that Vietnam Wall.
Very common.
Because we followed their steps.
Yeah. Have you been there to the wall?
I have signed up to go to Honor Flight. I've been to the wall twice. Not the real wall, but
the traveling wall. What do you think it's going to be like to go see that one in Washington, D.C. and go find Randy's name on there? And probably 100 other names.
Yeah. It's going to be, one, it's going to be very emotional because there's a lot of guys' names that are on that wall that I remember. But at the same time, I'm also looking very much forward to watching other people's reactions to it, especially people that never were in the war.
Mm.
You know, that's the part that... The part that makes me the most excited right now is the fact that we, as Vietnam veterans, are not referred to as just murderers and baby killers anymore. We are considered veterans.
Amen.
And we were just like everybody else, World War II, whatever, Korea, all of them.
Yep.
We've just done what our country wanted us to do to help protect it and our freedoms and our lifestyle.
And 58,000 of you died doing it, and you came really close to adding to that number.
Yes, I did.
And we still need to finish that story about Jack's second Purple Heart. We're going to do that when we come back, and also find out why this very patriotic veteran dreaded the 4th of July for many years. Find some photos of Jack Craig and of all the other veterans who appear on this show at hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, and we'll come right back after this. If you spent much time listening to Hometown Heroes, you've probably heard veterans from all over America talking about the mission of the Honor Flight Network, taking World War II veterans free of charge to see their memorial in Washington, D.C.
I wanted to see it. I've always wanted to see it since they built it. And to see all those guys there that did survive. And then they get emotional. Pretty soon you get emotional, too.
I tell you, that Honor Flight, I just can't believe what a wonderful deal it is.
Everywhere people came up to us, military guys and civilians, and wanted to shake our hands and thank us for all we did. I kept saying there were 16 million of us, you know, and I only did a little piece. But it was just an emotional high.
When it comes to our men and women in uniform, all gave some, and some gave all. A reality underscored as veterans visit the World War II, Korea, and Vietnam memorials and Arlington National Cemetery.
All those white crosses, they go into your heart. You just know that there's good guys there, but they had to die. For what? So you could live.
And while they are still living, Honor Flight gives the rest of us a chance to express our gratitude. Won't you encourage the World War II veterans in your life to put in applications for this all-expenses-paid journey to their memorial?
It does something for each of us who have been veterans who go back, whether we're a guardian or whether we're honored as a guest on the flight. It completes our life, really. It gives us a sense of fulfillment that we weren't able to have before, I think.
If you live near me in Central California, find Central Valley Honor Flight at cvhonorflight.org. Wherever you're listening, there's a hub in your area, and you can find it on the national website, honorflight.org. Sign up a veteran, volunteer to help, or donate to this important and time-sensitive mission. It's amazing what it means to these members of our greatest generation.
I'm telling you, they make you feel so good and so wonderful. Let me tell you, I can't preach enough about this. You listening?
The manner in which we were treated and greeted and acted toward was just awesome. It made me believe that the people of the United States are just wonderful.
Time is of the essence. Team up with Honor Flight today and help give our veterans one more tour with honor.